Hello, and welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure. This is the monthly podcast of the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. I'm Simon Montague, Director of Corporate Affairs, and today we'll be talking about global macroeconomics, the outlook for the year ahead, and the implications for our industry. And to do that, with me are two experts from Deloitte, Patricia Buckley, who's Managing Director of Economics in the United States.
Thanks so much for having me, Simon.
And Ian Stewart, Partner and Chief Economist for Deloitte in the United Kingdom.
Hello, Simon. Great to be here.
Well, in fact, both of you were here on this podcast this time last year, so thank you very much for coming back. Now, a year ago, there was much talk in Europe of issues like the energy price shock following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, high inflation, and a tough macroeconomic outlook. While in the US, I think it's fair to say that things were looking a bit more benign. And certainly our members tell us it remains the most attractive investment destination worldwide. Patricia, what do you see as the big macroeconomic picture, particularly in the US, for the coming year?
We're actually still very optimistic that we're going to get through the year, maybe not with as strong a growth as we saw last year. And so the US economy grew by 3.3% for the year last year. Growth has to start slowing in the US. Our population growth, you know, just makes it so. So without big increase in productivity, we're not going to see growth over 3% range. But slowing doesn't mean recession. Even though we can expect slower conditions, we think the U.S. will continue to avoid recession. But there are huge risks to the downside. Geopolitical issues being, you know, topmost. Everything from the issues in the Red Sea, with shipping being diverted around Africa, that has the potential to, you know, reignite supply chain concerns. And I think, and Ian can verify this, I think it's going to be more of an impact on Europe than it will be in the US. But, you know, we're watching a bunch of things. Inflation could reignite because of supply chain concerns. But in general, we are expecting a solid year for 2024.
So Ian, Patricia points to a relatively positive year, albeit with some big risks there. If we look at Europe, including in the UK, is the picture similar? Is inflation here to stay higher for longer? How do you see it?
I think the big difference, Simon, between the States and Europe is that Europe did have a big slowdown in 2023. Germany went into recession. The euro area, the UK, they avoided recessions, but they've seen really material slowdowns, as actually the United States has accelerated. So there is a slowdown that's happening in Europe. That's partly because Europe was really on the sharp end of the energy and the actually gas price spike triggered by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And I mean, I think the outlook for 2024 in Europe is for weak growth, if any growth, in the near term through to about the middle of this year. The big hope is that rapidly falling in inflation, and it has declined significantly from last year's peaks, will pave the way for an easing of monetary policy, rate cuts by the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, perhaps as early as the middle of this year. And then a recovery in real incomes, which drives what we think is likely to be a pretty weak recovery, but a kind of upward trajectory for GDP towards the end of this year. So I think, you know, we have not hit the bottom of this cycle. And just to echo Patricia, the other thing I would say is that I think the risks to the outlook are very much, as economists would say, skewed to the downside. I think the, you know, although actually financial markets are pretty optimistic and we are seeing signs of stronger business sentiment, but I think these risks around, you know, potential stubbornness of inflation, geopolitics, and actually risks in financial markets. Generally, when interest rates are high and growth is weak, problems pop up in financial markets. So I think the central case is we get some sort of recovery later this year, but I think the risks are it could be weaker and later than we expect.
Well, there's something else, of course, going on later this year, both in the US and in the UK, and that is the likelihood, or the certainty in the US, and the very strong likelihood in the UK, of national elections. And in addition to that, there's also going to be a new European Parliament. So we've got a lot of stuff going on the electoral front. And of course, elections inevitably lead to politicians making ambitious promises that then need to be paid for, potentially in the face of things like higher inflation and interest rates that can drive up costs and impact government budgets and investor sentiment alike. Ian, you painted a sort of, I think, averagely good picture for the UK. But assuming that we're not out of the woods yet entirely in macroeconomic terms, how do elections factor into your economic outlook for this year?
I think overwhelmingly the most important election is that on the 5th of November of this year in the United States. There obviously will be a lot of elections elsewhere, including in the UK. I would say in the UK, the gap between the two political parties has narrowed enormously since the last election in 2019. And I think any Labour government, if there were to be a change in administration, would be hemmed in by the same ugly constraints as the current government, which are that tax as a share of GDP is at very high levels, public debt is at high levels, and actually, for all the gaps in public services in the UK, actually public expenditure is also at historically high levels. And I think what this means is a Labour government would inherit a situation in which it is very difficult to undertake the kind of increases in government spending, which in the past have been associated with Labour governments. And so I think there would be a constraint on government activism, which would mean that, the changes in the UK, although not trivial, would be at a macroeconomic level, not significant. The US, I think, is a different story altogether because, and Patricia, I'm sure, will talk about this, but the a Trump II, as it were, a second Trump administration, would come into office having absorbed the lessons of the first administration, in particular with, I think, much greater clarity about ambitions and policies, but also with plans to speedily replace a whole cadre of the civil service. They think that they were blocked the first time round by intransigent or unhelpful officials, and with some, on the face of it, very radical policies. And just one is a proposal floating around to impose 10% tariffs on all imports into the United States. Now, plenty of policies which are mooted in campaigns don't see the light of day in government. But the point is, if this one did, I think it would trigger a trade war. I think it would be very negative. And I think also we would have to assume, a less predictable, more erratic and potentially more radical administration, which, given that this remains the world's great economic and military superpower, has implications for the rest of the world.
Well, Patricia, perhaps you'd like to pick up on a few of those points. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say from some of the books that were written after the first Trump administration that it was perhaps more erratic and unpredictable than previous administrations had been. But of course, it's by no means a given that President Trump will return to office or indeed that President Biden will lose. So if we draw a line, if you like, between those two things or try and make some judgments regardless of the presidential election, where do you end up thinking about what the US macroeconomic situation looks like as we get to the end of this coming year?
I think the important thing to keep in mind is that businesses are going to be hesitant to make investments. The level of uncertainty, the closer we get to November, is just going to increase. So the US economy itself could be damaged by the fact that both consumers and businesses are taking a wait-and-see attitude, which is unfortunate since we have a lot of legislation already enacted and dollars that are going to flow that would specifically target a lot of infrastructure investment. But it's just the uncertainty around the outcome. And as Ian mentioned, you know, most promises do not see the light of day. And it's always interesting the credit administrations take when things are going well and the blame they get when things aren't going well. When absent these big things like igniting a trade war really only impact the economy around the edges. But as Ian mentioned, there are some very big proposals out there that, if enacted, would definitely have material impact on the U.S. economy.
If we, however, do look past elections in 2024 to the longer term, how do you think should the government in the U.S., Patricia, how should it be looking to spur investment across the U.S. economy? What more can the next government do?
I think that given a quieter political landscape, investment would naturally flow. You know, in particular, you know, with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, those were a couple years ago, but it takes a long time for that money to start flowing out. So with the availability of actual funds and tax incentives, if that's the area you want to invest in, so we're talking, you know, what, semiconductors, clean energy, electric vehicles, batteries, and the things that supply those types of industries. Already, we've seen a huge uptick in investment in manufacturing structures. And it's really helped overcome, when we're looking at a macro view, the weakness that we've seen from investment in, you know, commercial real estate structures, for example.
Ian, if we return to the eastern side of the Atlantic, if you like, investors, of course, do rather like perhaps a bit of a quieter political environment, certainly a more stable one, which enables them to play the long game, which is so necessary for funds which are invested in infrastructure. We've had a pretty unstable period, certainly in the UK, over the last few years, really since Brexit, and that is certainly what is the view of our members. What do you think people could be expecting within the UK and within Europe that equally might spur investors to feel more confident ploughing more money into infrastructure in the long-term way that they do?
I think two important factors are that, you know, we're probably at the peak of the interest rate cycle, and we shouldn't forget that we've just been through the biggest tightening of monetary policy that we've seen in Europe in decades. You know, with the cost of capital going from 0 to 4-5% in the space of 18 months. So I think that we're going to see debt costs coming down. And I think it's also most likely that we're going to start to see a recovery panning out within 12 months or so. So I think those are powerful forces. I think the other long-term factor, sort of stepping away from politics, is the established position in Europe and the importance of the energy transition. But I think this is a long-term change, and I think we're in a world where we are going to see more regulation and more incentives for this huge transition. And of course, it requires investment in an infrastructure on an absolutely vast scale. Something that we can be fairly certain of is that what we have been through is a step change in terms of political attitudes to sources of energy. I mean, I think it betokens an industrial revolution. I mean, it's when you change your source of energy in an economy, you trigger profound change in the economy. So I think that's going to be the story in Europe for the next 10 years.
I think it's kind of right to say, isn't it? We are seeing, if you like, a soft landing, a sort of outlook in which the West does continue to skirt around recessions with reasonable growth by the end of this year.
If we had been told a year ago, Simon, that, you know, the outlook for Europe would be in the face of a dramatic rise in interest rates and energy shock of a magnitude that really hadn't been seen since the 1970s, that what we were going to see was a marked slowdown in activity, if anything, perhaps a short and mild recession, a resumption of growth, we would have said, oh, well, you know, that would be a very, very favorable outcome. And I think that is now a plausible outcome. Very unusual to get this level of inflation in an economy, this sort of tightening of monetary policy, and not to end up with a serious recession. So, you know, you use the phrase not being out of the woods, and that is very much true. I think that, you know, it'd be premature to assume that this has been pulled off. But I think it is quite likely that that is what will be achieved if some of the risks we've talked about do not materialize. And, you know, I think that for all of the problems of the European economy in terms of debt levels, low growth, productivity, unemployment, it would count as a, you know, really signal success for policy to have achieved a soft landing. I mean, as Patricia said, I mean, the US looks much closer to having achieved a soft landing. Indeed, as the economy's accelerated into a tightening of policy. I mean, the US needs to slow, and it's not entirely clear it's out of the woods. But I think, you know, we ought also to reflect on the things that have gone well, and the fact that economies are still, you know, just about growing in Europe, not Germany, but elsewhere, is an achievement.
Patricia, Ian there saying that the US needs to slow down and isn't out of the woods yet itself. Is that how you'd see it?
Yes, the US needs to slow down. Our labor force has been amazingly resilient throughout last year. Businesses' willingness to hire has actually surprised us. And, you know, while real wages have gone up, it hasn't ignited the spiral that we learn about in graduate school, where wages rise, prices rise, you know, and you get a very unhealthy situation going on where inflation feeds on itself. We never saw any indication of that happening last year, which is something we're very, very happy about. But again, given potential growth, productivity plus growth in the labor force, if you just add those two together, the U.S. economy should be growing at about 1.5%. So we definitely overachieved in 2023. We cannot continue growing at that pace. Consumers are spending more than they're taking in as income right now. The savings rate is at a very low rate. All those pandemic dollars that flowed to consumers, you know, they've spent most of that by now. But what we haven't seen yet is a strong pickup in delinquent debt. So they're taking on debt, but it's a rate that most people seem to be able to sustain. We saw a slight uptick in the delinquency rate last quarter. So we're keeping a careful eye on that. Businesses overall seem to be healthy with healthy balance sheets. So the things that could bring down the U.S. economy from within, those conditions don't seem to be there. So it seems more of a policy misstep or something happening outside the U.S. that could cause the U.S. to slow to the point of recession. But as you know, right now, the Fed's dealing with a pretty happy situation where they feel comfortable that prices are headed in the right direction, but they're not in any hurry to act to lower because they don't need to spur growth in the U.S. economy. So with spending up and employment still growing, it gives them some leeway to take their time before starting to lower interest rates.
For our infrastructure investor members, I guess they're probably thinking about what all of this means for them. Over the next, well, certainly in terms of some of the decisions and sentiment they'll have over the next 12 months, but then indeed this kind of investments they'll be making for the next five to 10 years. This year has kicked off, interestingly, amongst infrastructure investors. We've had the announcement of BlackRock buying Global Infrastructure Partners, very quickly followed also in January by General Atlantic buying Actis, with some commentators talking about this being a sign of the skyrocketing popularity of infrastructure as an asset class. So if you like, our listeners are starting this year in quite a positive frame of mind, or at least that's what the commentators would say. Patricia, I know you're not an infrastructure expert, but nevertheless, what would you perhaps be saying to infrastructure investors about the things they should be looking out for in the coming 12 months or so as indicators of what their strategy should be?
I think number one is going to be looking at how fast the interest rates start coming down. So I don't expect the U.S. Fed to act before the second half of this year because the economy is strong. They don't really need to act, so they're going to take their time. Thinking forward about interest rates, I would not be planning for super low interest rates, but you know, considerably lower than they are now.
And Ian, if we look at the UK and the European markets, does that outlook feel similar here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Simon, that the big call is on a soft landing. And you know, that is the way institutional investors are positioned. Institutional investors think overwhelmingly there will be some sort of a soft landing with moderation in US growth, weak start to the year for Europe, but then some sort of recovery later this year. And I think that's the big call, because if that can be unlocked, then we're on the path to lower inflation lower interest rates and a resumption of activity and of risk taking in markets. Now, I think there are two caveats. There are the kind of specific risks I think we've all got to keep in mind in relation to geopolitics, the stubbornness of inflation, the potential for blow ups in the financial system. I think we've also got to keep a very close eye on the political system. I mean, plenty of times political, really momentous political change has limited effects for business, but this is a very important election in the States. But I think that my position is a qualified optimism about the outlook in terms of the cycle, and almost a wonderment that we have managed so far to avoid deep recessions, and the kind of damage that is normally inflicted on economies by very high interest rates. And Patricia talked about it, but very high levels of insolvencies and unemployment and redundancies. Those sort of things have been, conspicuous by their absence.
Well, I guess if they are conspicuous by their absence, even if you are wondering at it, Ian, let's hope that situation does remain. So we've talked a little bit about inflation slowing, about interest rates coming lower, those being good indicators. But at the same time, the political uncertainty for this year does, of course, remain enormous with elections for more than half the planet. And let's hope you're right in saying that sometimes businesses can see past those things, and that perhaps sometimes political uncertainty doesn't actually bring momentous change. So overall, I'm sensing, I think, what people often say. They often say cautious optimism from both of you. But anyway, that does, I'm afraid, bring us to the end of this episode. So thank you both to Patricia and to Ian, both of you, of course, from Deloitte, for taking us beyond the headlines with insights into some of the macroeconomic issues that can be expected to influence infrastructure trends and decisions over the coming year.
Thanks, Simon. Great to join you, and I hope we'll be able to do so again in a year's time.
Thanks, Simon. I enjoyed the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, and of course, it will be lovely to see you both again next year and see how your predictions played out. Anyway, thank you both. Thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of Talking Global Infrastructure. And please do subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes, and follow us on LinkedIn. And we'll see you next time.